Welcome to You Are an IP Company podcast with Carrie Oberbrunner and Katie Rubino. Our passion is helping entrepreneurs publish, protect, and promote their intellectual property. This podcast is sponsored by Instant IP. And now, get ready for You Are an IP Company.
Folks, AI inventors, what are we talking about today? We're talking about the United States Patent Trademark Office. They just met on November 28th. I thought it was Thanksgiving, but I guess they were busy. Who knows? Maybe that was Black Friday, but there's some new updates, and we're talking about that today. There's even countries that are now allowing artificial intelligence to be listed as the main inventor. Katie, I saw on my phone the other day, it was kind of silly, but it was one of these Instagram things where it was talking about robot rights, you know, and I mean, it was being silly, but somebody in the comments said, yeah, this actually isn't too far off in terms of the future. But somebody walked in and, you know, said, oh, I guess so you got a new robot. And the person said, oh, you know, don't call it a robot, call it a blah, blah, blah. And they got back and forth. And basically the person was mad that the robot took their job. But then the other person said, this is human progress. We shouldn't be mad. Machines need rights too. And again, it was a mockery, but you know, in comedy, a lot of times we laugh because it's so close to being real.
Right. Yeah. But I think with AI, it's a real concern too. We're seeing a lot of companies lay off different workers because AI is coming in and taking over their jobs and really causing, I think, a lot of tension there. So I think it's a valid concern, and especially with robots too, where the robots, the AI, they don't need to sleep, right? They
can just
keep producing. So it creates a real situation of economic uncertainty here.
Oh, yeah. A few months ago, there was the actress who came out as AI, who's now being, quote, rented to different studios as that personality. Big uproar in Hollywood. Some people said this is ridiculous. Other people said it makes total sense. You don't have to pay for their travel, that you don't have to negotiate their contract. You don't have to shoot the same scenes 56 times. Like, you know, and so I think what we're starting to see is this integration of machines and humans. It sounds sci-fi. I mean, I think you're a Gen Xer, I'm a Gen Xer. We grew up in a world that put it off as like, yeah, that'll happen someday. And yet here we are. And now when you talk about intellectual property, who is the inventor? Mm-hmm. And we are, me as a publisher, Igniting Souls, you've been walking us through that whole Anthropic case with 500,000 books that were stolen and used to train the large language model without giving the authors compensation. They got found out. Our mutual friend, Evan Ryan, corrected me. I like what he said. He said, Carrie, AI didn't steal it. It was humans who stole it to train AI. What do you think about that little nuance?
Yeah, that's interesting because, you know, somebody had to put it into the AI, right? So I think it is an interesting thought about where we pull from and what the sources of training data are to the AI. And how do you, I think that's the biggest problem to solve here is with AI, how do you keep the training data current? So that it's up to date, right? And it's not doing things it shouldn't be doing or pulling sources it shouldn't. And I think, Carrie, you're a great example of this when your TED Talk was ripped off by AI, right? And it was an innocent mistake, but it was by somebody who the AI didn't know it was a TED Talk, and it was subject to copyright and IP protection. And then it went out there and was released as an article. And I think it's a great example of how when it's not trained properly and ownership and recognition isn't given, it creates a lot of IP infringement issues.
Yeah. And I know we talk about it in our book, which, by the way, we'll make the announcement here for the first time ever, but that is being revised and updated. It's still the number one book in trademarks, copyrights, intellectual property, all the stuff. So that's awesome. But we wanted to update it, so we're updating that. It'll be out here probably in about a month or two with the updated version. But, you know, Katie, you're starting to see this even with cars, self-driving cars. Like, who is responsible if the self-driving car actually hits a drunk person who's in the middle of the road, completely drunk? I've heard self-driving cars are safer than humans, but let's say it does kill someone. Is the self-driving car going to jail?
You know, like
who is responsible? Was it the person who trained the AI to determine that that was a human or not a human? Like, I think law is going to go through a whole revolution. What do you think?
Definitely. Because the thing is, too, these are questions we've never really had to ask before, because it's such new technology and it's getting, I think it's interesting, you know, a year ago, year and a half ago, when things like tools such as ChatGPT were just coming out, right? People were kind of nervous. They maybe didn't even want to use it. They didn't know how to.
Sure.
And now a year later, it's in almost all these products. People have
universities.
Even places that are not quick to adopt new technology, universities are adopting it. You can put it on your smartphone. People are running it through layers and layers. I mean, I was at an event a month ago, and I met this man who was very high up at a large pharmaceutical company here in Boston. And he had no background, like no training, formal training in AI. And he, in a matter of days, used all these different open source AI tools to create a whole new workflow process that has created such huge efficiencies in time management and workflow that it's unbelievable.
Yeah. So it does beg the question that, you know, you see the world through intellectual property. I do too. I mean, once your eyes are open, I'm hearing that more and more. We just had somebody join our certified advisor group, gentleman named Austin, and him and his colleague Laura said, after we read the book, we now see IP everywhere. And it's true. Like, you know, I always have my smoothie here, but like, I'm looking at my smoothie and it's like, there's the R. I see the R, you know, and they're naming certain things. And, you know, even yesterday in my CWL class, they're doing these end of the year marketing, presentations. And there's this one young lady who presented this new makeup idea that she thought of for Justin Bieber's wife, Haley, right? Just a thought. And I'm like, that is a great name. And I said, hey, class, let's just stop right now. Let's go to the USPTO and see if that name is taken. And I'll tell you offline what it was, because I just think it's so good. It's a Christmas play of a makeup, you know, like a spinoff.
Yeah.
It was totally available. And, you know, she said ChatGPT suggested the name, you know, like that's a tough one. So she basically used AI with permission to help shape her marketing. AI came up with a great product name and it's available. Nobody's trademarked it. Now, again, I highly doubt if she were to actually even go forward with that. She won't. She's a college student, but I encouraged her to. That's one thing. But secondly, Katie, technically AI came up with it.
Right.
You know? Yeah. And I know that's not a patent, but like, you just see that we're in a creativity renaissance right now where people are coming up with new things by the second.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I just think, too, a lot of people like to sort of use these open source tools as a gating issue, right? To kind of organize their thoughts, bounce a few ideas off right. of it, and then use that to really unleash their own creativity around certain things too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's a whole new world we're in. And to me, that's even more reason why instant IP is needed, because it almost like is a technology that keeps up with the speed.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like, fine. Let's say that young college lady who's already in college debt wants to at least timestamp that she's there first. Later on, maybe in a year or two, launch a makeup brand. But she can at least go back to that. Because, you know, I'm working on trademarks now. And some of these things take years by the time you do office actions. And it's very slow.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's something, too, if you're looking to launch your company or your product and you just want some kind of initial protection fast, right? And you want to show ownership of when you really conceived of that idea. Yeah. That's why I think it's such a great tool to timestamp the ownership and the conception of the idea, because this comes, you know, issues over this pop up all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. It really comes down to the day. I mean, you and I are even looking at certain things and we're saying, oh, good thing we got our filing in first.
Yeah.
Before other things. And it is, folks, it's you can either respond by fear and retreat and lack, or you can advance. Katie, as we land the plane today, I wrote an article about my photographer, Mark Thomas, because again, like, I like this photographer. I've known him for almost a decade, but he's feeling the squeeze with this, what do you call it? Nano banana. Have you heard about this?
No.
So nano banana, you'll totally hear about it. Google it for a second, but it's a Google product. Nano banana. It's one of these things where now that you heard about it, you'll hear about it forever now. But
yeah,
it's Google's basically image creator that is unrecognizable from professional photography. You know what I'm talking about?
Now I'm on here. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. So it's like everywhere, and you're totally going to find this thing. So the point is this. I wrote an article because I wanted our buddy Mark, my buddy Mark, to not just cower in fear and be like, well, why should I even go to work anymore? Here's what I said. This is an article, Katie. I'll share it with you on LinkedIn here. I wrote it the other day. But it basically says, is AI going to replace my job? I hear this question almost every day. This question comes from lack, fear, and scarcity. We should say instead, how can I add more value than AI? This focuses on faith, surplus, and abundance. As long as humans add value, they will be compensated because we are paid to solve problems. But if AI can solve a problem better, this is tough for some people to hear, then humans should be released, fired, fill in the blank, to add more value in other ways or solve problems that machines can't yet solve. It might sound cruel or cold, but that's how economic works. And then I talk about my photographer and how he actually can do what AI can't do in terms of, seeing an angle, you know, showing up. If I'm fearful of, you know, getting photographed, or, you know, he can see things that AI can't. So here's some examples of Mark over the years. And you can see, like, this guy's taken so many pictures for years and years and years. But if Mark's not thinking the right way, you could see how somebody in a room by themselves could almost have like a panic attack.
Right. Absolutely. When I just think too, if, especially in a lot of these creative fields, right?
Website. Especially,
yes, artists,
yeah,
songwriters, it really begs the question of how are you going to use AI as a tool,
yeah,
and adopt it, right? I think you're right on the money here that it's not about coming from a place of scarcity, but it's about how can I use this tool together with what I can contribute and what I can really add value to,
yes,
in order to really offer something that no AI tool is going to be able to offer.
And I think that service providers need to realize that they are part of the brand.
Right.
So what I'm saying is, the other day I was watching this guy on Instagram, literally in 60 seconds, he talked gibberish on purpose to be silly. He just talked gibberish into AI. And he said, make a song, make it sound like 80s metal based upon the gibberish I just gave you. And literally pressed a few buttons. The song was so catchy. It was so fun. And it could be a viral hit. And it took the guy 60 seconds, which used to take artists. I mean, bring in a drummer, learn music. I mean, you're talking like months, and this guy cranked it out in 60 seconds. It can go viral. He can make money. The point is, if you're only offering what the service can, you might lose to AI unless you tell the backstory, unless you bring in the human emotion, some of that stuff.
When I just think too, like AI in a lot of ways too, you can tell when things are put together with AI, especially written documents.
Send
me stuff all the time, and I'm like, okay, this is, you put this into ChatGPT. But I think you can use it. There's ways to be smart about it too. Right.
Research assistant.
You can use it for certain things, but I don't think it's really at a point where it's, you know, producing written works that are far superior than what a human could produce. And, you know, there's a lot of issues around if it's even accurate and the hallucination. So I think, you know, it's a good starting point, but I don't think it's at the point of delivering high quality work product either.
Yeah. And fully agree with you. Somebody said, I think it was Peter Diamandis, he said, right now is the worst it's ever going to be. Meaning like AI right now, the version we have, is the worst it's ever going to be. It's only going to get better. And so I think if I'm somebody in the creative fields, I teach these young college students, I'm like, you got to use the tool so that you can create more value than just saying, well, I'm not going to use it at all.
Right. When I just think about too, when cell phones first came into existence, remember they were these huge, chunky things, right? Then we kind of got it a little bit more sleek where you could, you know, put it in your pocket, but it didn't have the smartphone capabilities we have now. So it's kind of like each generation of product gets a little bit more refined and a little bit more better too.
It's true. So let's land the plane, Katie, with you found South Africa is the country, at least one, that gives full inventor rights to AI.
Correct. Yes.
Wow. So that's interesting.
A lot of the U.S. has said no to that. Germany, a lot of European countries, Canada, So it's interesting to see kind of as time progresses, if any of these countries, their thought leadership and laws on this change at all as we embrace this technology more and it gets entwined into, you know, our everyday life here too.
I think that I'm going to ask you the question. You've been around a lot longer than me than for IP. Do you believe that US is only a little bit behind South Africa?
That's interesting. I think we could get there at some point in the not too distant future. That it's, you know, one thing I'm tracking very closely is that under the previous administration in the government White House, AI patents got more difficult to prosecute. However,
that's very interesting. How so?
Yeah, it the laws around what was patentable in them became tougher. So when you could first file these patents, like in 2020, like 2019, when I was doing a lot of early filings before ChatGPT really existed, you could patent just about any step of the AI process.
Wow.
Where then it kind of swung the other way as more and more of these filings started happening with ChatGPT. The examiners and the guidance from the USPTO got much stricter. So you had to, you know, specify the inputs to the machine learning, the training data, what sort of data sets were labeled, right? What was the output, and how that really got integrated into a practical application. But there's been talk and suggestions from this new administration that rules surrounding patentability of these sort of inventions are going to ease up. So I think it's interesting to see over the next few years how that might play out and what that might mean for companies too.
Folks, that's why you listen to this podcast. We're bringing you the fresh news. 14 hours ago, this came out as a big story about the new USPTO view on AI. It's not, I'm not saying it's clickbait. It's not as big as I thought it was once I started reading the articles, but like Katie says, we are on a trajectory, and it's important to bless you. It's important to keep abreast of all this. And we'll share the details with you. So bottom line, if you're a creator, an author, an inventor, if you're in the trades, don't fear AI. But I really believe that LinkedIn article that I wrote is a great question, which is, how can I add more value than AI? And if you spend your time and your brain cells on that, you'll add value as opposed to crud, AI is going to take my job. Now you're getting uncreative and you're trying to cling to old models. So what are your thoughts, Katie, as you think that's good advice?
Absolutely. Because it's the thing is, too, that I've seen with all inventions, right, is that when it first is introduced, there's a lot of hesitancy around it, right? And people are coming at this from a place of fear and unknown, right? And what does this mean for me? But it eventually gets integrated into our daily life, where then it becomes something routine that we don't even think about it anymore. You know, take, for example, blockchains, right?
Yes.
5 years ago, nobody knew what a blockchain was. Mm-hmm. Now we have so many things that run on blockchain, and we've seen even more technological innovation off of blockchain, NFTs,
yes,
right? Cryptography, things that we don't even realize are getting done on this exchanges. And it becomes just part of our everyday way of living.
That's true. That's true. Excellent. Folks, keep creating, keep protecting that IP, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to You Are an IP Company Podcast with Carrie Oberbrunner and Katie Rubino. Visit instantip.today for more help on your IP journey. Remember, your ideas are valuable. Protect them today.